Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold. Hello, how are you?
Good. What do I say? Good what? Good day. Good day,
Alan.
Folks. Good day, folks. And welcome to Kill Me Now. All right, Alan, you know, I always start with a Kill Me Now moment because I'm always aggravated about something.
Right.
Yeah. So, apparently there's some voice coming in from another, I guess, or feedback or something. I have no idea.
You told me to listen
is.
To Howard and Robin, so I'm trying to...
Yeah, I said to Lauren, listen to Howard and Robin, because Robin doesn't talk the whole fucking time while Howard is, you know, knows the person. Anyway, today we're here with Alan Zweibel.
Hello.
And I love... All right, first of all, I've loved you forever because I, you know, I was... This is what I'm talking
I'm
about.
I'm just adding to what you're saying. It's not meant to be listened to.
Yeah.
Sort of augmented.
I concur.
Yeah. Don't. You're going to.
No, I'm not going to indulge this
all right,
at all.
Okay,
it's the last
thank
time
you.
I'll ever speak to
you. Okay,
her.
Thank
even if
you.
I see her on the street afterwards.
Okay,
that's
fine.
It.
Perfect. Now, oh, you have to call her him. See? It's so hard.
I'm pretty.
You have to call her him.
Yeah, because.
I have this physical condition where I was born a boy with titties
he's
and
a
pussy.
No, don't. I've asked you not to describe it like that.
That's the easiest way to describe
it. No, it isn't. You don't have to say pussy to Alan Zweibel.
He's a... you know what a pussy is.
Yeah, right. Look at him.
I'm older than you,
I've seen
I never
his sketches.
Heard the word
yeah.
sissy before.
Okay.
Okay.
Is there a better way that you can say? So
yeah,
Lauren was
a
born
nanny.
A female but is a male but won't... doesn't want to transition physically because he wants... to continue getting his girl parts, and he doesn't want to chop his body up. All right, anyway, but it's not about him. It's about us.
Right.
Alan, okay, so...
this is going great so far.
I know, isn't it?
Just
so I just have to say that yesterday I was traveling from Canada. I was in Toronto.
Right.
To Newark, because there's this new Porter airline where you can go right into...
I've taken Porter.
Like Porter.
Yeah, Porter's nice.
Right. So I go to the, you know, when you come home and you have to stand on the friggin' line with the form you're supposed to fill out. Well, I didn't... They didn't give me the fucking form on the plane.
Oh, this would be customs.
Customs. Yeah. Right. So I stand and stand and stand. I finally get up. He said, do you have that form? And I had grabbed one on the way there, and I said, oh, right. And I pulled it out, and he's like, you can't fill it out here. And then I look at it, and it's fucking French. So I had to run all, and he's like, you have to go back and stand online. I'm like, fuck you. Like, ugh. So anyway, I went back. I got an English one. I had to stand online again.
Again?
Yeah, again.
So how much time did this consume?
Oh, I can't even. I got an hour and 45 minutes sleep. All I wanted to do was go the fucking home and go to bed. I hadn't been home for like 13 days. Ooh! And then I finally get through. I can't find my second bag. It's the last bag to fucking come out. Then I go again. I don't realize they have to take that thing. That card,
the
again.
The card you filled out.
Yeah.
You don't fill it out and take it home with you.
Well, I forgot you had to go through again. Yeah. And I'm like I put my head down on the luggage cart. Like, I can't fucking take it anymore. And they're like, are you okay, ma'am? Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just fucking miserable. So I went through. But I was cursing a lot, and they didn't put me in a room.
Usually they would put you in a room for a lot less.
Right. I was like, fuck, I can't. But it was like, why the fuck? What the fuck is wrong with you? You fucking idiot. You know, it was my usual inner dialogue.
I understand that this is just polite conversation for you. But usually those people are very, very temperamental.
I know.
Sometimes they'll build a whole
I know, and I didn't do it. So that was my kill me now moment. But I am so excited that you're here.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here.
Now, Alan, I know you have a new book out that fantastic. I mean, okay, the greatest thing about it's called Benjamin Franklin.
Huge pain in my
blank. But we can fill in the blank.
Yeah, it could be anything. It could
pussy.
Be neck.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say it. I've asked you to stop with the pussy talk.
You're a lesbian.
Oh, Alan, is this... I try to be classy.
You know something? She's trying to raise the level of sophistication over here, and with all due respect, you're bringing it down to a very workable level, by the way.
Okay, all right.
Thanks,
Alan.
Thank
you, Alan.
Indulging.
I was throwing her a bone.
All right. Him!
Hey, I wish they threw me a bone, you know what I mean?
Oh, God, I can't. He's not here. Okay. So, okay, so you write this book, and it's in the voice... Of an adolescent boy.
Well, there's two characters. There's a 13-year-old boy who's writing letters to Benjamin Franklin.
Right.
So there's the two voices.
Right.
And I wrote this with a guy named Adam Mansbach, who a couple of years ago wrote a children's book that sold a gazillion copies called Go to Fuck to Sleep.
Right. That book, I did a reading of that at the Jewish Community Center. They asked me to come and do a reading of Go the Fuck to Sleep. When I saw that book, I was like, why the fuck didn't I think of that?
Yeah, no, it's...
I know.
And that book sold God knows how many copies because they were given by parents of young kids.
Right, to other parents of young kids.
Brilliant.
And what had happened was about 2 years ago, I was given the keynote speech at the, I guess it was the Tucson Book Festival.
Right.
There was about 1,500 people in the audience. And each table was an author. And I was looking at the roster of authors in attendance, and I saw Adam Mansbach's name. Coincidentally, one of my daughters sent me the link to the audio version of Go to Fuck to Sleep like a day or so before.
Right.
Samuel L. Jackson reading
Go to Fuck to Sleep. That's hilarious.
So to hear a very tired, worn down Samuel threatening, go to fuck to, it was really funny. So I sought him out. We went out for a drink, and we decided we were going to write something together. He lives in Berkeley. I live in New Jersey. So how are we going to write together? And I had written a novel previous to that with Dave Barry.
I love that novel.
Lunatics is fun.
Yeah.
So I said, well, listen, why don't we, since it's with 3,000 miles apart, let's make it, here's a big word coming up.
Right.
Epistolary. I can't pronounce it. Epistolary. which means
epistolary letter.
Yeah,
right.
Which is correspondence.
Right.
So we came up with this idea. There's a kid named Franklin, mm-hmm. whose parents named him after Benjamin Franklin,
right.
this iconic American, with hopes that maybe it would wear off on him.
Right.
It didn't. He's 13 years old, just entered junior high. Doesn't have a lot of friends. He's got an unrequited.
I love him.
He's got an unrequited crush on
right.
a girl. Not doing well in school. Doesn't
so
have a lot
I'm
going to
say you wrote that voice.
Well, this is the interesting part. No, because my co-writer is younger than me.
No.
So he's closer in age to
right.
this kid. Where I'm older, so I'm closer in age to
right.
Benjamin Franklin.
Franklin.
So what the kid does is, the history teacher asked the kids to write a letter to a historical character. He writes one to Benjamin Franklin to tell him how shitty the name
right.
is working out for him. He has a fight with his stepfather, and to get
I
back
hate
at
the
him,
stepfather.
The stepfather's awful, Dirk the
asshole.
Jerk, and he steals a stamp from
right.
the stepfather's collection, mails the letter, cut to 1776. Benjamin Franklin comes waddling out of his house.
Right.
There's a letter from this kid from 2015. And a grandfather-grandson relationship strikes up because, as it happens, Benjamin Franklin is having the same social problems with the
right.
other founding fathers
right.
this kid is having with his peers.
Mm.
So this is mostly epistolary. It is mostly letters between the
right.
two of them.
Right, and it's so great because there's so many issues. I mean, I enjoyed reading it, but it's
grown-ups,
like...
Grown-ups, adults
yeah,
are having fun reading
it's
it.
It's
yeah.
so great, and now I want my son to read it. But it's so great because you can sort of explain politics and relationships to these kids.
Absolutely.
Who are watching these fucking assholes on Fox News.
Oh, and then there's another debate, I think, tomorrow
yeah,
night.
Yeah, tomorrow night. Yeah. Well, it's not a debate. It's not a debate, Alan.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's not a debate. It's you know what it is? It's a sideshow.
Right.
It's the bearded lady. It's the sword swallower.
Right.
It's a freak show. You go, wow, people are like that?
And they pay.
God
and
made
yeah.
this?
And they're going to... I can't even...
God's
do you
real.
Wish... Do you wish you were writing for SNL now?
You want to know something? When you see this... do I wish... I wasn't one of the more political writers when
yes.
I was a... Franken did a lot of that. Tom
right.
Davis did that. Jim Downey does it now and did it back then also. I appreciate it. I miss the activity
right.
of SNL. But as far as the parody of this is concerned, you know, what they're doing such a great job doing
yeah.
is it's hard to make fun of something that's already so funny.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, but they're doing a great job. When my friend Larry David did Bernie Sanders
I've
a
never
couple
heard
of weeks
of him.
Ago. He's
what does he do?
He created a show called Seinfeld. Do you ever see that?
Seinfeld.
Sounds
is
familiar.
That about signs?
No, it's about felt. It's
Felt.
Yeah. Seinfeld. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
like
it's 7th Avenue. Fashion
right.
Avenue
it's about
thing.
The garment district.
Yeah.
yeah.
So he played Bernie Sanders, and he was hilarious. You
mm-hmm.
know. So it's fun to watch.
He was really funny, and I mean, if he well, Bernie's not going to win. Do you think he'll win?
I you know something. I don't think so, but. God
I kind of love him. All right, can I just say something? And
he's
then
Jewish, right?
Yeah, Bernie. Hello.
Well, you know something? There's a lot of people named Sanders who aren't. The
yeah,
Bernie
whatever.
Part, you don't stop there. You got to go to the whole
That's true.
Sanders part.
All right.
And God knows what his middle name is.
It's
What's the Colonel
yeah.
Jewish?
What?
The Colonel.
Colonel Sanders?
Yeah.
No, not Jewish. They,
right.
Who makes chicken like that? They make fucking fried shitty chicken, the Jews? No.
Used to be good.
Shut up. So, I meant chicken. I'm sorry. So, you know, you what? When I forgot what I was going to say. Bernie Sanders, Jew. Then I was thinking
you were talking about. Does he wish that he were writing?
Right.
Was,
I know that's it's. Forget it. Just forget it. So now, Alan.
So ridiculous.
I forget we even met. How are
What's
you?
What's your name?
Alan. And you?
Judith.
Alan, pass that joint. Thanks.
So, Alan, here's the things. Can I just do? Can I like just indulge you?
Do
these
with
are
me
the
what
things that I find fascinating about you. Okay. First of all, you worked on SNL. This is what I was going to tell you. And then I'm going back. So Bernie Sanders, like, I love when he's like, because he's fearless. And he's like, why are the people doing the thing with the die? Right? And it's fun. And I love it. And I relate to that voice. Why are you, get out of the bathroom. I have to, you know.
Yes.
And then you have... I mean, Donald Trump is the thing that everyone hates about America all in one package. And yet, when he said, you know what, 9/11 happened on Bush's watch, I was like, finally, someone fucking is saying the shit that, you know, so some of the stuff he says, I'm like, well, good.
It's landing, and it's there's a big country out there that's obviously embracing him.
It's unfortunate. Yeah, all right,
no,
anyway.
It's unfortunate.
But that was the one thing I was like, oh, all right. All right. But, okay. So you worked on SNL, and you're one of the first writers.
Well, I was with the original group. I was there from 75 to 80.
Right.
Yeah. Ugh.
I was 12 years old when it came on, and it was, I mean, that's all I talked about. And, I mean, you created Rosanna Dana with Gilda. I mean, I have to say, I wrote a piece for CNN about when Joan Rivers died, about how she sort of gave girls like me this permission to dream that we could be stars. Right. And I remember, and I was thinking, you know, Gilda Radner, through my whole entire high school experience, was a funny Jewish girl. Like, she was the funny, fearless, hilarious Jewish girl, and she sort of had the same kind of impact on me. I mean, all we did was imitate her all the time.
Right.
And I mean, some of the things you wrote, you created the samurai.
Well, actually, John Belushi auditioned for the show. It was his character.
Right.
And another writer named Tom Schiller wrote the very, very first samurai. It was a samurai hotel. And prior to my getting the job on SNL, before the show started, I was writing for stand-up comedians, and I was working in a delicatessen
in
Queens. You name it, I sliced it for about 2 years.
Right.
And after Samurai Hotel, Lorne had said to me, you worked in a deli, right? And I went, yeah. He says, write Samurai Delicatessen.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I said, you bet. And I had no idea what that meant, but I did. And then I wrote all the other ones afterwards.
You know, first of all, so you come from this Jewish family in Long Island.
Yeah. Someone told you that we're Jews? Or you just was able to pick up on
something? I don't know. I saw your penis in the...
Oh, in the cup.
Yeah,
in the cup.
He's a black Jew.
So, and then you're supposed to go to law school.
Well, you know something? Look, I always wanted to do this, okay? I always wanted to do what I'm doing, but... you know, you always wanted to go, gee, I don't know how to become a comedy writer. How do you do that? So I thought maybe, okay, let me, so there's always something to fall back on. Like,
right.
Remember in the old days they told a woman,
become
a school teacher.
Teacher.
So this would be the teacher thing, but the law school said, no.
I know,
no,
I love the story.
No.
About
no,
how
no.
you went, you took it, you took the
well,
test.
Well, I took the law boys.
Yeah.
And they graded it, I don't know how they do it these days, maybe it's still the same, from 200 to 800.
Right.
And I got a 390.
Right. And then you took Kaplan.
Stanley Kaplan's course, and my score catapulted up to a 401.
I know. That is the fun. You know, I can't take tests either, but I'm smart. Like, you're brilliant.
Well, you know something? There are certain people who just can't take standardized tests.
I can't.
You know?
I can't think standardized.
No, that's exactly right. That's why it's a really weird indicator as to who gets into places, who doesn't.
I know.
Wait a second. There should be other
criteria.
Conspiracy. Yeah, it is a conspiracy.
Yeah.
Well, Sammy's. I got that same
Sammy's.
Thing. Yeah.
That's great.
I worked there for
All right. Sammy's Delicatessen. All right. So was there humor growing up in the house?
Well, yeah. There was humor because I think that, you know, it's a way of, it's the way you deal with life.
Right.
You know
of course.
Not
yeah,
taking
yeah.
things seriously.
Right.
So it's not like it was so ha-ha funny, but the attitude was, all right, we hit a wall here. There's a problem here. Okay, what are we going to do?
Make a joke.
Right. And move on.
Were you popular in school?
Yeah, I was a jock. Yeah, I was a jock and I was funny.
What the fuck? That's like my son.
Nice.
My son's a jock and funny. And he's so popular.
Well,
you're not, if you're a comedy writer, you're a miserable fuck.
No, I wasn't a miserable fuck. I was a happy fuck. I made people laugh, and I could throw the discus and, you know, catch a football. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Did you play college at Buffalo?
I threw the discus in college.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get a scholarship?
No. Did not get a scholarship.
Because, you know, your parents would have been like, I don't know.
It would have been easier. It would have made everything easier.
Who knew Alan was an athlete? He could throw the... the last thing he threw was this plate of food. All right, so... Okay, so you start writing, you start making money writing jokes for comics. $7 a bit.
$7 a joke for Catskill comedians.
Like Freddie Roman.
Freddie Roman, Morty Gunty, Dick Capri, Dick Lord, God. Billy Baxter.
Do they still use some of the jokes?
Oh, God, yes.
I know, because they, I know, it's unbelievable.
There's that show Catskills on Broadway
My
wife Robin and I went to.
And you wrote it.
A few years ago. And I'm sitting there and I'm mouthing the punchlines to her. And she goes, how do you know these jokes? I said, well, it's the 40th anniversary of me writing those jokes. And, it's just like in the old vaudeville days when they used to have one act and go from, you know, vaudeville house to one house to another. And they can do the same act their whole career. And a lot of these guys did that. You know, they played at different hotels.
Right, because there was no, you didn't do it on television. No one was taping it. You didn't have HBO specials.
Absolutely.
So life was so much easier.
It was a lot easier. Those hotels were great. When I was growing up on Long Island, when we would go away for a weekend, let's say you'd go to the mountains. You'd go to the Neverly or the Concord.
The Neverly. At the Neverly. Oh, yeah. Okay.
We'll be here all week.
You know how I went to Toronto?
Yeah, to do 25 questions?
Yeah.
So for a Jewish mother?
Yeah. 25 questions for a Jewish mother, which was not the original title, but...
What was?
God doesn't pay rent here. It was one of the things one of the women said, but all the producers were like, no, no, no one will know what it's about. And so it has to be 25... They wanted the word Jew in it because they wanted all the Jews to come to the theater. So I'm doing that show. I haven't done it in a while. And so Damon is my stage manager. So he comes and sets up the lights and everything. He usually stays the whole time, but he couldn't. So he was there for like 3 days. And so you know what he says to me?
No, what?
He's like, oh my God, I love Mac Weldon.
You're shitting me.
I swear to God.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah. He goes, I used your discount. Kill me. And my balls, he went on and on. You have no idea how comfortable they are. My balls are like...
I told you about the balls, huh?
Anyway, so it's like his favorite thing in the whole world. And he's like, I go on there, I'm getting stuff for Christmas. His boyfriend loves them.
Christmas is coming up.
Yeah, yeah. So he said that, he loves it. And the t-shirts are great. He's like, he will not wear another pair of underpants.
Wow, go us.
Yeah, exactly. What's our code again? Mac Weldon.
Uh-huh. What do you say to me every day?
Kill me now.
Yeah, so just part of that.
Oh, so if you go to Mac Weldon and you put discount code kill me, then they know that.
Exactly, and you get 20%
off. 20%
off.
It's such good quality.
It is really good quality.
I know, and Henry and Ben fight over the shirts.
Ha ha ha.
Should I start wearing men's underwear?
You definitely want to start wearing these men's underwear. You might have like a mini little pocket in the front, but that's okay.
What do you pocket for?
Well,
I know what they use the pocket for.
Right, and they're men's underwear, but they're so snug and nice. They just kind of like hug all around.
Yeah, it's nice to air out that area.
Definitely. Yeah. And they're nice and airy and breezy, supportive. I
know, but can you believe that like out of nowhere he starts telling me this shit?
That's pretty incredible.
Wow.
That's pretty. I wear men's and women's underwear, and this
together?
Is
together.
Sometimes, when I'm feeling.
Oh God, I have to go throw up. All right, go to Mac Weldon and use kill me.
JudyGold.com/Mac.
So, yeah, now they eat your material. Like you do a set on. Anything.
Oh, God, yeah. No, it's totally different.
Right.
It's a race to the TV.
Right.
And whether
they don't realize how easy they had it.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you meet Lorne.
I met Lorne.
At the deli?
No. Oh. I met Lorne at Catch a Rising Star.
Oh, can we talk about... I mean, that's where I started.
Well, that's...
And you were there in the 70s.
Well, what happened was I took all the jokes that those old guys in the Catskills wouldn't buy from me.
Right.
And I made it into a stand-up act for myself.
Right.
Got on stage and told them with the hope that a manager or an agent or somebody who... Like the Jack Rollinses of the world.
Right.
And those guys, Buddy Mara... would maybe want to represent me. One night, Lorne came in, and he was looking for actors and writers for this new show called Saturday Night Live that was going to premiere in the fall. and he liked my material. He asked to see
I heard
more.
He said, you're a bad stand-up, but you're, stand-up. I love your material.
Yeah, it was some version of that. It was like he couldn't believe how bad I was.
Right.
And I didn't want to be a comedian. I was just advertising the material. So I stayed up for a couple of nights, and I typed up what I thought were like 1,100 of my best jokes.
I mean, 1,100 jokes.
Well, they were jokes that I had written for these old
Catskill
guys.
I know, but that's a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
In such a... And you were how old?
24.
1,100... Oh,
yeah,
all right.
No, well, they were jokes that I accumulated. What I used to do was, as an exercise, I would pick any given week, right? And I'd go, okay, this week the subject is buying a car.
Right.
On Monday, I'd write a monologue the way Jack Benny would about buying a car. On Tuesday, Phyllis Diller. On Wednesday, Joan Rivers. On Thursday, David Steinberg. On Friday, George Carlin. So by the end of the week, I would have five monologues about the same thing in different voices. So I've accumulated. I just wanted to train
that
my ear.
That is unbelievable. Do you know how genius that is?
It was an exercise I made up, you know, and... Because I wanted to write scripts someday, and I didn't want everybody to sound alike.
Right.
And so I accumulated a lot of jokes, and so I typed them up, and I showed them to Lauren.
Type. Does everyone know what a typewriter is? Who's listening?
And this was the kind with the keys that went
down. Yeah, yeah.
And then they would interlock.
Remember, they would they'd get stuck.
Get the ink from the ribbon on your hand.
Trust me. Oh, it was a whole to do.
Yeah.
It was a whole to do, and I gave him the book of 1,100 jokes, and. He hired me.
I don't think he's ever received that many jokes from anyone.
Oh, God knows. There's so many writers that have come through. There's so many great writers. I have no idea.
Okay, Alan, you're like a fucking legend.
That's true.
Okay. So, okay, so here you are, and you're really close with Gilda.
Uh-huh.
And yet it's completely platonic, but you're kind of in love with each other.
Well, yeah. I mean, we both had such horrible histories with the opposite sex that we knew that if it ever was anything more than a friendship, that would probably just crash and burn.
Right.
And we had a good thing going on creatively. So it bore certain frustrations.
No tongue kiss ever?
No.
Wow.
No. For all I know, she didn't have a tongue. That's how platonic it was.
But it's so amazing because it's so hard for straight men and straight women to really be...
Well, in my book and my play, Bunny Bunny, which is about the two of us, those frustrations are...
apparent.
Yes. Okay. Sort of a love story, right?
Yes,
That's the
tagline?
Subtitle, sort of love story.
Okay,
yeah.
So you're there. It's the 70s.
Yeah.
Everyone's doing drugs. Like, did you know it was bad? Like, did you know it was bad for John and, that it was too much? Like all these people.
You know something? It was the 70s and it was a different era. And, you know, I don't know of anybody doing drugs because I was so stoned myself I couldn't see.
Right.
I couldn't see if anybody else was doing anything. And it was, there was a certain amount of invincibility that you felt you had. Also, you know, it was pre-AIDS.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was just a different world.
Yeah.
And it was, an extension of college. It
right.
just kept going.
Right.
You know what I mean? That kind of life. You know, just
now,
kept going.
I remember, I went to Catch, I guess, in 1980, it's got to be 82 or 83 for the first time, because I did a show at Rutgers with, I had done stand-up as a dare, and then they put me on a show with Adrian Tolsch, Bill Sheft, and Larry Ambrose. And then Adrian was doing the Monday night, you know, hang out and try to get on thing and told me to come in. And I did. I'd go in every Monday and try to get on. I mean, I'd get on at 3, but I didn't fucking care, you know.
Wow.
And I remember Lloyd, the bass player. Like, if the bands laughed at me, I was so happy.
Because they... Because it landed, yeah.
Yeah. So, and there were before people in the audience, but I didn't really give a shit because all I wanted to do was be a comic, but...
And they hear every joke.
What?
So that is impressive.
I know, right.
Yeah.
So, I look at... I mean, you were at Catch... You know, it's like, it's so hard to tell people that there were no cell phone. I mean, I was a backup. I used to sit at the bar hoping someone didn't come in on the weekend.
Uh-huh.
But it was like Belzer was the MC. I mean, that's when you were the MC, that was a huge thing.
That was a huge thing. I mean, I was there earlier than you. By 82, I was already, I had already left SNL.
Right.
So I was there, let's say, 74.
Right.
Only for about a year.
Right.
Because once I got the job, my means to an end were.
Right.
I would only come back to watch my friend Larry David.
Yeah.
Who was still there.
Oh, my God. I loved watching him.
You know, but, yeah, it was fun. And when you look back at it, Billy Crystal was starting,
yeah,
and Larry was starting, and Elaine Boozler was big,
yeah,
in those days back there.
Chevy.
No, Chevy.
He didn't start around that? Oh,
no.
Never
okay,
mind.
Okay, so why don't you... That's not funny. And why don't
Come
you...
Come on.
No, never
Still
mind. How long have you been waiting to say never mind?
I knew I'd have a chance some point.
Okay, so...
It didn't matter if it was the right point.
Yeah, it just mattered that
he
had to say never mind.
I feel like that was the right time.
Okay, so...
We'll talk later.
So... You, I mean, I read that you met your wife, Robin.
Robin.
And
she worked on the show. She
right,
was a production,
production assistant. Don't think I don't do my homework. And it was Gilda, while you were stoned all the time, saying, don't fuck this up.
Well, yeah. I mean, I write about that in Bunny Bunny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, look, we were dating secretly. And,
because of work? Because it was a work
Yeah,
thing.
Because, you know, I wanted to give it some dignity. I didn't want
right.
it to be part of...
Did you ever do it in the SNL offices?
We did it under the stage.
No, you didn't.
No, we didn't. I just made that up now.
Oh, God,
but
I would have
been great.
That.
I
know.
I
should have
said yes. I should have just lied.
Yeah.
But we told Gilda. She was the only one who knew.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were outed. How were we outed, you asked? One of Robin's jobs as a PA was to hire extras for, mm-hmm. You know, for scenes. And there was one scene, Kirk Douglas was hosting the show, and it was a bar mitzvah sketch where he played the bar mitzvah boy's grandfather, and he was on the dais with,
right.
You know, with Bill
Was
Murray.
He admitting he was Jewish at this point?
You know, he wore a yarmulke. That's his...
All okay, right, that's
okay.
good. Okay.
And the dais with the bar mitzvah boy and, you know, Gilda and... Lorraine and
yeah.
you know, the cast, and but Robin had to hire extras to fill out the other tables at the bar mitzvah reception.
Right,
and our parents had not met yet. Okay, and she thought it would be a good idea to invite our moms there. Okay, so my mother and her mother came and they sat, and you know they were extras, and all was well until my mother got it into her head that. Robin's mother had a better table at the bar mitzvah sketch.
Oh, my God, that's hilarious.
Okay. Yeah. So all of a sudden, a cat fight ensues.
Oh, my God.
And this is a blocking day. There's cameras. So
right.
it's like beamed to our boys overseas
right.
and stuff. So, yeah. So that's
what... Wait, so what'd your mother... Did she complain right there or did she say,
oh,
Alan,
right there,
can you come here?
Well,
I don't understand why Robin's mother is
yeah.
sitting so much close. First of all, I can't hear. There's a draft.
You must have been there that
yeah.
day because you're very close to being verbatim here.
Wait, were you... Did you want to fucking wring her neck?
I was just so stunned.
Right.
It was... Yeah, the thought was, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this
right.
hair?
Did she know about you guys dating?
She knew I was dating Robin, and Robin's mother was dating. No, it was just totally. She didn't have the seat that she would have liked.
Okay. My God, what a JEW. Wow.
And took very few prisoners.
So, oh my God.
Did
they end up liking each other? So that was the beginning of
That was the beginning of this lovely...
Because her son was being taken away.
By another person.
Right. right. Alan! What was Robin's mother's name?
Pearl.
Why is Pearl? What the hell is going...
And they were all still alive, so...
Oh, God. Now, let me ask you a question. Did you act like a four-year-old when you found out... Did you want to scream... Did you scream at your mother in front of everyone like a...
No, I try to, you know, I try to quell this
right.
this thing, but it basically,
so
there was some sense of decorum, and which continued like...
Now, have you discussed this with her, like, Ma, you know, you fucking
no,
screwed up.
No, because,
okay.
you know, selective memory
do?
Is a beautiful
yeah.
thing.
I am fascinated. I mean, first of all, you've won Emmys, Writers of the Guild of Worlds, Thurber Prize for
Thurber
humor.
Prize I'm very proud of. That was for my novel,
I love that.
The Other Shulman.
And I ran the marathon. Did you ever run the marathon?
I ran it three times. That's how I was able to
yeah.
write that book. I ran New York City Marathon twice and Chicago once.
How was the Chicago? It's flat.
Flat. They set world records at the Chicago Marathon because of its flatness.
Right. And it's right by the lake. It's very pretty.
It's very, very pretty.
But the New York, I did it in the pouring rain.
What year?
1997.
Well, you did it before I did. I did it in 2001. I did it 6 weeks after
World Trade Center. I remember that.
And it was an amazing experience because I flew in from L.A. and nobody was flying still. Because this was like five, six weeks after 9/11. And I, so Robin and the kids stayed in L.A. We were living in L.A. at the time. I flew in and you line up, obviously, in Staten Island. And as I'm going over the Verrazano Bridge, if you look to your left, there was still smoke from where the towers were.
Yes, and the smell. Did you smell it?
The smell. And I had music that I had CDs and stuff that I was listening to.
You're not supposed to listen to the music.
You're absolutely right. But what happened was, which I guess would be B, when I got to the other side of the bridge, Brooklyn, there was so many people, and it was such a fuck you, Bin Laden kind of thing. I wanted that to be my music. So I took my CD player and my CDs, and I looked for a fireman.
And you gave it to him?
I said, give this to your kid. I said, and I just let the music coming
because
from the
that's
crowd.
What you're supposed to, like, you're supposed to let the people cheering.
And it was great.
I know.
I
had a running coach who would not let me listen to music.
I am surprised that they let you listen to music during it.
You're usually not supposed to.
No, you sneak it. And I did that because I was training that way and all that. I didn't realize
that. And you know, at that time, CD players were tiny. Okay, so
non-skip
ones. And also, I had the furniture that they were on, so I had these big speakers. It was a big load I was carrying.
Oh, Judy still has all that.
You know, I have these speakers that are, they're normal size in my apartment. And this one's like, no. And they're great speakers. And it's like, I'm not fucking throwing out my speakers.
I'm talking about your CD collection.
Your wall of CDs. I have hundreds and hundreds.
I got vinyl albums.
Yeah, I have mine in my storage unit. I think I'm going to put a shelf up and put them in my apartment.
They're beautiful.
Aren't they?
They're art.
They are art.
I do agree.
Okay, we don't care. So, here's my other fascinations with you. You have been married for...
For those of you who bet the under, okay, next month will be 36 years.
36. Mazel tov, Zimmentoven, mazel tov. 36 years. You have three successful, well-adjusted children, and you have grandchildren.
Four grandchildren.
I mean, what the fuck? You're, like, perfect. Well, and you're happy. Like, what the fuck?
I'm attracted.
It's not happening.
All right.
Go.
I've been lucky. I've been really lucky.
Why do you consider it luck, or do you consider it you worked at it, good value? It was Pearl. What's your mother's name?
I'm Shirley.
Was Shirley a good mother after all?
She was a good mother, and Julie was a good father, and Robin was the one that I could have. I had probably the potential for spinning out of control.
Right.
You know, as a matter of fact, and I write about it, that, like you said earlier, Robin, at one point when I was doing a little bit too many drugs, she gave me an ultimatum, you know, horror the drugs. Mm. You know, I had co-created in the late 80s a show called It's Gary Shandling Show with Gary Shandling.
Right, yes, I remember. Yeah.
And it lasted 4 years. In the first year, I commuted from L.A. back to Jersey. We had just built a house. We had our second child. And then when the show was picked up for an order of 54, which made a three-year commitment.
Right.
And Robin just said, okay, let's move. I mean, I've had that kind of support, which has just been really, really... I haven't had any kind of opposition that
right.
way, you know?
So do you feel that she sort of... Well, she wanted to be a mother and a wife. She wanted to be a mother and a wife. That means nothing. Lauren always tells me what time it is because I never shut up. But I'm fascinated by you, so we're not going anywhere. Anyway, so did she want to be the partner of... I mean, was she fine with that?
Well, she was great with it, and that's my point. Don't forget, she worked on SNL. So
right.
She...
I mean, she was an educated...
She witnessed what it would be like, okay? What she didn't know, and she couldn't have known, was what she saw was me working with the group.
Right.
Okay. Once I left SNL and I started working more on my own, writing scripts and right. plays and books and whatever, that part, that took some adjusting. And because I would be in the apartment, I'd be sitting in a chair, and she'd come in with groceries and go, mm-hmm. why aren't you helping me? And I'd be still sitting in the chair. I'm going, can't you see I'm working?
Right.
When it looked like I was napping, which right. in fact, maybe I was. So that took some adjusting to do. But I have to say that she's been the greatest thing in the world.
It's amazing because I, you know, I'm in a relationship with Elisa, who's a therapist. I was with Sharon for 20 years. We have two kids. And but it's when, you know, Sharon and I, both very, very ambitious people, and her in business and this sort of corporate, just complete opposites.
I understand.
And I am, like, when you show, when you say that visual of you sitting there, like, just staring into space and
go,
saying, I'm working.
Yeah, I'm at work. Yeah.
I'm so, that's so me. And when, sometimes when, like, when Elisa will say, Judy, did you, and I don't even hear it. Yeah. I don't even hear it. And then I'm like, wait, what? What? And then it's like, fuck, you just screwed up my thought.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It,
and it's so hard to tell people that, yeah.
It's something that, see, it's something that we had to get used to ourselves.
Right.
You know, that you go, all of a sudden you zone out.
Right.
And you're here, but you're not here.
Right.
And then, God forbid, you're with another human being.
Right.
Who's got a question or right. their own needs or just...
right. And you're like, no, like this thought, if I don't finish
yeah.
this thought...
I got to finish
and
this.
And write it down.
That's
yeah.
exactly
then
right.
Then it's gone. It's gone.
That's
it's,
why you guys are terrible test takers, but you're like geniuses. You're crazy.
Right. We are geniuses, right, Alan?
Well, there's a focus issue. There really is.
Absolutely. I am on ADD.
I'm incredibly ADD. It's,
yeah.
It's just you just wander off and
right.
follow that
and
thought
follow
wherever
that.
It's going to take you, because that's where it's going to lead you somewhere you don't know.
Right.
But you've just left where everybody
that's
else
is. That's
what
I try to tell her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard to tether yourself to that because the rope.
You know, I have to, do you meditate?
No, and I'd love to.
I'll meditate with you.
Once, can you teach this?
Yes, I am. I've been doing it for years, and I'm the last person who would. I mean, my mother every day. You hyper. You're so goddamn hyper. Why are you moving your leg, Judith? And I.
Why are you moving your leg?
Constant with this. Yeah. I banged my head against the pillow till I was 13 and had to go to sleepaway camp. I mean, you can't even. And this therapist of mine, old therapist, said, and I was like, yeah, right. And I started this mindfulness. And I have to tell you, because you can get caught up in that thought, you know, you have the ability to do that, you can transfer that to this meditation thing, and it clears your head. It's fucking unbelievable.
David Steinberg is a...
I love David!
He's a good pal of mine, and it's part of his daily regimen to meditate.
Yeah.
And, I've asked him about it, and you know, it's something that I'd love to do. I remember in Annie Hall when Jeff Goldblum was on the phone, he said, "I forgot my mantra."
Right.
You know, so, you know, I'd love to do that.
Oh
yeah.
My God, I'm going to send you tapes and
oh,
shit.
Good.
I mean, I say tapes. I'm so old. Okay, so I'm fascinated by the whole successful family, and it's. You're amazing. Like, you have it all.
Well, you know, and my friends, my friend Billy Crystal's got a family.
You know, you're like one of those people who's like, you know, my friend Barry Obama. You know,
I don't know Barry Obama. What I'm saying is most of the people I know have been lucky to be very grounded that way. And I think that, you know, look, to each his own. They're
right.
very, very, very successful
but do you
people
think
who don't
it's,
have those things.
Right,
you know?
But do you think it's... The spouse, like that the spouse is compatible with a psycho ADD?
I do.
Oh, yeah.
I do. I think it's if you're going to have both ends
right.
somewhat successful and to keep the balance of it,
right.
I think you need to be with somebody, wow, you know, who not only understands and is able to adapt.
It's a flexibility
there's
thing.
There's a flexibility thing, and I think that they have to... they probably give more than they receive.
Absolutely. And they
and
they
have
the other
to
thing
sort
of
be
not,
okay with that, I think.
Right. And yeah. also the not taking it personally. Like, it's not against you. It's that I really, honestly, my mind is elsewhere.
I'm over here
yeah.
now. I got to still be here. Right. I'll come back eventually.
And it's like, when it happens, I don't think people who don't have ADD get it. But, like, when you're finally at this totally focused place... And someone, it's like a fucking earthquake. Yeah, it's like.
Absolutely. Why not smack me in the face?
Right, yeah. exactly. And you're like, no! yeah. So, all right. So.
You should have a sign.
Do your kids.
That you yeah. put up.
You can't. I can't focus enough to put a sign up when I'm in that space. But are your kids creative?
They're creative in their own way. They're not doing what I do. My son is a very successful businessman. Our, two daughters are both very successful in their own businesses. But, you know, my middle daughter, Lindsay, is married and has a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And our son, Adam, is married. He's got three kids.
I saw the three kids. They're so, they kind of look like you. They're very light.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. It's we're dominant in that yeah. that side there. This is why Belle Jean.
Yeah.
And they all live in New Jersey, as do we, so they're all nearby. So, once again, to keep the balance of things,
oh, my
you know,
God, it's like...
We did that on purpose.
You hit the fucking jackpot.
I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky.
And happy.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, let me ask you a question, because we ask everyone this. Are you on any antidepressants?
Please? No. Oh. I
what?
Jesus. I should be.
Fucking shit!
I'm never going to hear the
end of this. I thought you were going to be on antidepressants.
No.
There's only a few handful that
no,
are.
No, no. I've been on like a, ADD drugs that they gave me Dexedrine for years.
Yeah.
Okay? No, I'm not. But
nothing?
Look, I should be, and if I can get a prescription for Valium, I'd be thrilled. Okay?
Right.
The fact that I'm not on it, that doesn't mean I don't need it.
Right.
I mean,
do
I got
you
the same
sleep?
Angst. No. I go to sleep around midnight in my bed, and I wake up around 4, and I got to turn the TV on, so
right.
I go into my study and lay down on the couch and turn the TV on and hopefully sleep for another couple of hours. But I wake up every day at 5:30 to
right,
start
and
writing.
Right,
and write.
And write. I mean, yeah. that's so disciplined.
That's
yeah.
so good. That's...
I can't, and then you say by 11?
By 11... Look, if you can write from 5:30 to 11,
right.
you've had a great day.
Right.
Oh,
but there
yeah.
are some days. How many days is that? By 7 in the morning, I go, it's not going to fucking happen today.
So, but you do you just sit? Do you know what you're going to write? Or
well,
do you, I mean,
I like,
when you have an assignment, it's easier, right?
Well, when you have a deadline, of
right.
course, it's easier. What I like to do is work on two or three things at the same time, because if I'm dry or hitting a wall in one,
right.
shift gears. It's just like going to the gym and
right.
you do you flex different muscles,
right.
you know?
That's
but,
great.
Well, once again, if you're working on a show or you have a play where there's
right.
actors and there's a time and you need the pages by such a, or the audience is coming in, well, then it's there's the imposition of
mm-hmm.
deadlines.
Right.
But if you don't have that and they say, okay, here's some money, give us the script in 3 months, our instinct is to go, you know, go out and then pull an all-nighter like
right,
we did
right,
in college.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah.
So somehow, some way, you got to keep churning it out and go, okay, I got to focus. It's once again, it's the
right.
focus thing.
Right, it's so,
so
weird.
So try to do a little bit.
I'm telling
but it's
you,
against
you're
going to
be a good meditator. You're going to be a good meditator.
It's against
oh,
every
yeah.
instinct
all
that
right.
we have.
I love the David Steinberg show that you
oh,
produce.
Inside Comedy.
Yes.
Thank you.
Such a great show. That I'd love to
yeah,
be on.
Yeah, I mean, that's all David's
that
doing.
Show.
He's
I'd love to be on that show. I'd love to be on that show.
This is why you're
oh, I'm sorry.
Here
the show is on hiatus right now.
Fuck!
But,
I mean, oh.
The, but
I love him.
But I will tell David.
And that, I love Robin, his wife.
Robin Steinberg. Robin
yes.
Frumkus. Todd Frumkus was the maiden name. Todd was first married name. Steinberg. So there's a whole to-do over
I
there.
I met with David Frumkus. Steinberg. He wanted to direct a thing I wrote.
Really?
Yes. And then, I don't know what
Isn't
happened.
He the greatest, though?
Oh, my God. And I just look at him, and I remember him when I was... I mean,
the
again,
albums we had,
oh,
and all the Nixon
and the
stuff.
Tonight Show, and the...
And Smothers
Brothers.
Brothers. Yeah.
Okay. Here's what I... The other thing about you that I love. You know, I have been around... I mean, since I'm... What is it? 1920, I have been doing stand-up. In clubs, I remember I couldn't order drinks. I go to these stupid cabarets in Pennsylvania. I mean, I did street fairs. I never.
You did street fairs?
I can't even tell you. And I never stopped. I did stop my junior, senior year of college. I would only go out on the week because I really wanted to get my degree. I'm a Jew, so you have to have a
You have to frame something.
But yeah, but seriously, I would go to happy hours. It was the 80s. You know, anywhere. I went lunchrooms, college lunchrooms. I would go anywhere to do a set. I used to do these prom shows where I'd get up at 2-3 in the morning and go to stand up New York for the 4 a.m.
Wow.
I mean, I would do anything to get stage time. I can't even tell you the shitholes I stayed in. And I always knew what? Wrap it up? Too bad. I always knew you, and I always knew, and I've been around guy comics, you know, and I'm a lesbian, so I never was like, I want to fuck you. I was never one of those comics that I really just wanted to be a comic.
Right.
And I always knew of you and that you're one of those male comedy writers. I have never, ever heard you or felt you say female comic, male comic.
You know.
Ever.
There was something very interesting that when I got the gig on SNL, it was so egalitarian when it came to what we were doing. I remember walking into those offices the first day and seeing Gilda and seeing Lorraine and obviously Belushi and Aykroyd and Franken. I mean, they were really funny. And I was laughing. No one made me laugh more than Gilda. Gilda just made me laugh. The fact that she was a woman didn't even factor into the work part of it, you know? And I never considered those things. I just never... Obviously, some people make me laugh, some people don't.
Right.
But that's just a human being thing.
Right.
I never considered the boy girl part of it, you know, and that stuff. I know some people get hung up on
that. Oh my God, it's unbelievable. I mean, when you're a female look, you can't deny it. I just never was like, I don't care. I don't care. I'm just going to be that. But I always that was the one thing I always knew about you and felt about you was that it was about that humor had no demographic.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely, and once again, like I told you, that little exercise I gave myself where I would write.
And you think about the female voices you wrote in, Joan Rivers, Phyllis Diller.
Right, and also, Richard Pryor.
Right.
You know, people, you know, there was a comic back then, Pat Morita.
Oh, yeah, I remember, yes.
Mr. Miyagi, you know. So I would try to capture the voices. It didn't matter anything other than what they sounded like.
Oh, God, Shirley did a wonderful job. She really did. So what do you think of the state of comedy today? I have to say I have a little bitterness that people who do a, 3-minute YouTube video and then get a million followers, you know, I find it annoying that I had to travel around the country for years and years by myself writing jokes and trying to get on, you know, and now it's like, oh, here's 4 minutes of me, you know, putting on makeup. I'm a celebrity.
You want to know something, though? I remember in the 80s, all right, there was the same argument when cable became a thing.
Right.
And when every cable channel, all of a sudden there was a brick wall.
Right, yes.
And there was a guy standing in
Caroline's
front of it.
Caroline's Comedy Hour, Improv.
4 minutes, 5 minutes. And the next thing you know, they were on The Tonight Show.
Right.
And the next thing you know, maybe they had a sitcom. And then the next thing you know, the sitcom got canceled. Mm-hmm. And they were back in front of a brick wall. And they were damaged by that point. I do think that quality is quality. And I think that, there's like more expeditious ways of making it really big now. But
it's really the...
It's what do you have?
What
back happens
it up.
Next? What happens after that? And I think that... And that also happened before us. I'm sure that people who were really big in radio were saying this thing about
called TV,
television.
Yeah.
You know?
Maureen O'Hara just died, and it was really about black and white and color.
Yeah.
She looked so beautiful in color, and that... helped her.
No, that's not to deny if anybody comes along and there's something posted and it gets a million hits and all of that. Wow, that's great. They hit the jackpot and then they can go on and maybe have really wonderful, substantial careers. But I think that whether or not, you know, it's done that way or done where, you know, you were on the road a lot and you played in the Poconos and then you did three shows here. And then it's what do you have next?
Right.
You know, what else do you have in the tank?
Right.
You know? So I think it's all the same.
It's about being prepared.
I do
when
think
you get
so.
That. Now, what pisses you off the most in life?
People whose teeth are much smaller than their gums.
Yeah,
those people, they have little teeth.
Right.
And their gums are like really big.
Right.
I go, what the heck? What's that?
Right.
What's that all about? Why?
Have you ever asked someone with little teeth?
I've said, what's this like? And brushing your teeth must take a second.
But
but that might be the only advantage. Because they always get that.
And how the fuck do you chew?
How do you chew? Yeah, you got little teeth. You got lots of gums.
Looks like they can eat an apple.
A couple of people I've asked, they weren't pleased. They weren't pleased with the question, so you know that there's some sort of turmoil that they have.
That they've gone through.
Yeah, no, that makes me nuts. The minute I see that, I
so
reel back in horror.
If you wrote something and the perfect actor comes, they're like, this is the perfect person for this part. You got to hire this person. You got to, and then
they have those kind of teeth.
Can you not work with that person?
What I would do is maybe I'd work with the person because it's about servicing what you've written. That being said, I would take out my contact lenses and not have to look at their face.
I gotcha.
Because who needs that? There's enough stuff.
There's ISIS, for God's sake.
Yeah, it is.
We don't need tiny teeth people looking at us in the face.
With ISIS running around.
Yeah. Cannot thank you enough for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. This has been great.
Really?
Are you kidding? I loved it. I'm thrilled that I'm here.
Oh, my God.
Thrilled to be talking to
you. You're the best. See how happy. What the fuck? I want to be like that.
No, this is. We're young. We have our health. What else? Well, maybe not that young anyway.
Yeah. And I have my knees hurt.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a thing.
Yeah, you do.
A clicking thing.
I would love. All right, I'm putting this out there, just even though I don't believe in any universe bullshit, but one of my bucket list things would be to work with you.
Well, let's see if there's anything. Let's put it in the. Let's keep it on the
zeitgeist.
Table.
Zeitgeist.
Okay, let's keep it on the table. Let's figure it out.
There's something.
I would love that. Do people always say that to you?
I get that, but discerning. But let's keep it on the table.
Oh my God! I love that. Did everyone hear that, Shirley? Pearl, I'll give you a good seat, both of you, front center. I mean, I could talk to you forever.
Well, let's keep going. Oh, we can't because...
it's my fault.
Why?
It's actually CBS's fault. They want the studio.
Fuck them.
Those bastards.
I know.
I say so, yeah.
Alan, I love you. And I grew up in New Jersey.
Where in Jersey are you?
I grew up in Clark. Don't tell anyone.
Oh, I've seen signs for Clark.
Yeah, don't go.
What happens when you get there?
Yeah, it's just a boring. Clark. This is the big thing. We all hung out at Clark Lane's bowling alley. That was the big thing. And now, are you ready? It's a Whole Foods. And that is the biggest thing in Clark.
Wow.
That's probably the most liberal thing in Clark,
that's
too, right?
Number one, yes. And then there was a chemical plant that I remember with all these chemical shit. And now it's a golf course. Enjoy that and like a recreation area. So I hope everyone enjoys their tumors. Mm-hmm. And that's about it.
Thanks for having me.
Oh my God, Alan! Please come back.
My book. It's lovely.
I love the book. I love all everything you do.
You have to send it to me.
What?
Benjamin Franklin, Huge Pain in My.
Oh my God, it's so great.
Pussy.
It's really. That's it. I am not kidding. I'm turning into my mother. I can't with the pussy. I can't. Alan, isn't it a little classless?
It's a little bit. It's
a callback.
It's a callback.
Callback to when you said pussy earlier.
Yeah, and I got pissed off.
Yeah, and the pissed off and, is also a callback.
I mean,
anyway,
the name of the show.
Yeah, whatever.
Full circle.
All right, whatever. Thank you, Alan's White Belt. Pick up Alan's book. It's so good.
Benjamin Franklin,
A Huge Pain in My, but we know what it is.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. So long.
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. Hello.